Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is the Athletic Hockey Show.
We are back. It is a Thursday edition of the Athletic Hockey Show. It's the M&M boys. At least that's what we like to call ourselves.
No,
it's
Mendez and McAdoo. We don't like to call ourselves
we
that.
Don't.
We never discuss that. No,
I'm trying to fish. Listen, I'm trying to fish for a sponsorship deal. But like, but the twist would be, it would be like Smarties.
Yeah.
Maybe. And then they could go the tagline. Looks like M&M's prefers Smarties. You know, and they'd be like, whoa, what does this mean? But our American audience are like, what the hell are Smarties?
Yeah, we've already lost half the audience.
Yeah,
right there.
Exactly. Never mind. Looking forward to this because last week I said, I can't wait till we get to next week. Training camps will be rolling. We'll have some storylines to get to, which certainly we will. Jesse Granger is going to pop by a little bit later. Tons of mailbag questions, a fun voicemail this week in hockey history. Got to ask you this, though, Sean, as camps opened on Wednesday, I thought one of the biggest stories to come out was all of a sudden it felt like the screws tightened ever so slightly, or maybe by a lot, on Kyle Dubas in Toronto, where all of a sudden it seemed to come out that, hey, guess what? He didn't get a contract extension. He's in the last year of his deal. You'll often hear the term lame duck thrown around when someone's in the last year of their deal. Here's my question for you, because I know, look, this is the team. You've made no bones about it. You've cheered for the Maple Leafs your entire life. You have your finger on the pulse of this team, probably as well as anybody. So my question is this. What is Kyle Dubas, like, what's the bare minimum that he needs to accomplish to get a contract extension after this season? If clearly, if MLSE has said, we're not going to do it now, so something has to happen down the road. What's the bare minimum?
Yeah, it is hard to say because, you know, you said MLSE made that decision. We don't know who ultimately made that call.
Right.
And that's a big part of the story in Toronto this year. It's not just Kyle Dubas, it's Brendan Shanahan. What is, you know, how secure is his job? The easy answer is to say they need to win. You know, if they win a couple playoff rounds, then he's back. I think we agree on that. If they win one, is that enough? Well, it probably depends on what it looks like and what kind of season it is. You know, clearly if it's another Montreal situation or Columbus situation, then I don't think they continue. Because something will have to change. I mean, the market has been extraordinarily patient, and maybe rightly so, with what's been a very, very good team, at least in the regular season. The big question for me is, what happens if they have another year like last year? Fantastic regular season, dominant regular season, go into the playoffs, and, you know, unlike Montreal, unlike Columbus, this wasn't a team. They didn't choke. They just ran into a really, really good team and came within one goal of beating them. You know, is there any scenario where if it's the Lightning again, or, you know, if the Panthers are have another big year, is there any scenario where, you know, that would be considered good enough? I don't think there is, but again, you know, to make that change, who are you bringing in? How do you get better? It's very interesting because a huge part of the Kyle Dubas story for years now in Toronto, And either, you know, maybe depending on your view, the fatal flaw of the Kyle Dubas era, or maybe the single best thing about it is he's just refused to ever make a panic move. He's refused to make those cliche change for the sake of change, and he almost races to reassure after each annual first round exit that, you know, we're not going to break up the core. We're not blowing this thing up. We will run it back. And now it is possible, depending on how this season goes, that he will be relying on those above him to make the same decision versus to say, you know what, we've got to either we want to go in a different direction, we need to go in a different direction, or we feel like we have to, because how many times can you go back to this well with in this Toronto market? You know, look, it's Toronto. It's not like Leaf fans are out there demanding a championship every year, obviously, but you got to make some progress at some point, or you do start to lose the faith. And I don't know. It's to me, it's fascinating. And the other fascinating piece is who's making the call, because, you know, I was thinking about this today. Let me ask you, you're pretty plugged in, you know, things. Kyle Dubas reports to Brendan Shanahan. Does Brendan Shanahan report to? What's the name of the person that Brendan Shanahan reports to? Do you know?
I don't know.
Okay, I'll tell you something. I'm a Leafs fan. I don't know either.
Okay.
And that's a nice change.
Well, is it a board, though?
It's, well,
is
yeah.
Is it like a
who's on
or
the board?
A board of,
you know, give me the names of some of the people on the board. I couldn't tell you.
I think Larry Tannenbaum's still there, right? But
I'd be willing to bet 95% of Leaf fans don't know the answer to that question, just like I don't. And that's good, because we've lived through the board. We've lived through the pension plan. We've lived through always feeling like, you know, some guy in a suit who didn't know anything about hockey was making these decisions. And it hasn't felt that way for the last few years. It's felt like this is Brendan Shanahan's team.
Right.
If we start finding out the names of some of the people that Brendan Shanahan reports to this year, that's going to be a very bad sign for how the Maple Leaf season is going and how the Maple Leafs future is going to look. As soon as we start knowing those names, there's potentially some real problems in Toronto.
You know, I thought that was one of the most interesting things to come out of kind of day one of training camp, the Kyle Dubas media session. That was interesting.
No extension. Yeah. And not, yeah, you know, not that they're working on it. Not that, hey, it just hasn't happened yet. That he was told by Brendan Shanahan, there will be no extension this year. The other thing I would say, though, when it comes to the Leafs, I mean, yeah, you mentioned lame ducks. You hear that more with coaches, but maybe with GMs too. An extension in Toronto is not the same as it is in a smaller market or more penny-pinching market. And remember, this team ate Lord knows how much money to get rid of Mike Babcock. This team gave Dave Nonis a 5-year extension and then fired him shortly after that. You know, they ate $10 million, maybe more than that, to get rid of David Clarkson back in the day. Like, it's not as if Kyle Dubas had an extension that he couldn't be fired next year. You know, there are some teams where that extension means you're not getting fired because they're not going to pay two guys. Toronto's not like that. So it maybe is less of a story in Toronto than it would be, except that this is Toronto and nothing is ever less of a story in Toronto than it would be somewhere
and,
else.
You know, that kind of ties into, and we talked about this last week when we kind of batted around your, why am I blanking on the name? Bizarro meme.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And that dropped on Wednesday. The Eastern Conference version of the Bizarro Meter. Mm-hmm. And was it Monday or Tuesday? Well, earlier this week, you did the Western Conference,
yep,
right?
Well, yeah, West was yesterday, Tuesday.
Tuesday. Okay. So when you drop these columns, one of the things we often find is, you know, people get pretty worked up about these arbitrary rankings that, mm-hmm. you know, I can't believe you gave these guys a 6.4 or whatever, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Was there one theme that came back to you after you did the Bizarro rankings for the East and the West, you're like, oh wow, that people seem to kind of focus on one thing? Like, was there one thing that surprised you from the reaction from people on this?
No, I can't say that there was. I can't say there was any fan base that really jumped. I mean, with the exception of the Islanders, and they were right. For some reason, I kind of left the Barry Trotz stuff out. It was, you know, didn't register with me as an off-season move, and of course it was for them. So that was just me screwing up and Islander fans pointing it out. You know, a lot of it's one of those fun columns, because I'm saying strange. I'm not saying good or bad. This isn't my ranking of, you know, who had a good or a bad off-season. So you can't get too fired up at me. But it is always interesting when, you know, people will jump in and go, oh, my team was weirder than that, or, you know, my team is was stranger than these guys. Everybody always thinks their team is the wild one where crazy stuff always happens. That's why it's kind of fun to see it all laid out And you see everyone else right. go, oh, why? Well, yeah, all right. I guess we are maybe fifth in our own division in terms of who had the strangest summer.
You know, speaking of, you did the Bizarro rankings, you know, Dom and Shayna and Sean Gentile, they get together and they put out the rankings. And now I should point out, this is based on Dom's model, mm-hmm. but Shayna and Dom and Gentile, they kind of all get together and they write these rankings from worst to best. And every day they drop a team or two into the list. And so, you know, you're kind of nervously waiting for your team to show up.
But you don't want to see your team.
You don't want to see your team.
The longer you go, you're happier.
And I don't want to spoil anything for Friday, but I do know that here as we sit here on Thursday, in reverse order from the worst to the best, so far they've revealed Arizona, Montreal, Chicago. I don't think there's a huge surprise there. A lot of people thought those might be the three worst teams.
Sure.
Then you got Buffalo. I think Sabres fans probably be a little disappointed if, you know, they kind of ended on a good note last year. They're hoping that maybe Owen Power comes in anyway. Mm-hmm. Buffalo, Philadelphia. I don't think there'll be any quibbles there. But then Columbus is the next team. And then the two California teams, Anaheim and San Jose, coming in next. Are you surprised that Columbus has appeared in these rankings so quickly? Like they're 27th overall in Dom's model. He's having them as a bottom six team. Mm-hmm.
After they finished in the National Hockey League. They weren't in the bottom 10 last year. And that's the especially tough part is not only are they ranked this low, but he's got them dropping 5 points in the standings.
Do you think his model thought that Goodrow signing with Columbus was like an Onion article or something?
Maybe it could be.
Explain this one to me. Like, I'm shocked. Like, and not that I thought that Columbus would necessarily be a playoff team, but you could talk me into them hanging out with the Ottawas and the New Jerseys, mm-hmm. and maybe
that's what's going to get you. As we get into this, we may find out that the difference between where they're ranked and being five spots higher is like 3 points, for a mathematical model, it's a rounding error almost at that point. And no doubt if you're a Columbus fan, you're looking at an 81 point team signs the biggest name free agent. And you're expecting an improvement. You're certainly not expecting them to take a step back. It did really surprise me. Now, that said, they don't just spit out the charts and graphs and say this is what's going to happen. There's explanations, and they do walk through the process. And in some cases, they will openly disagree with what the model says and say, you know, here's what we think it might be missing or what's, you know, what the issue is. The explanation for the Columbus ranking essentially boils down to the model, at least, believing that Columbus really wasn't an 81-point team last year. Right. That they were worse than that.
They overachieved.
That when you look at some of the underlying numbers, that essentially that this was a team that was worse and maybe even significantly worse than an 81-point team. And so they're getting better by adding Johnny Gaudreau, but that doesn't offset what we expect to see them, the step we would expect them to take back from just based on their level of play last year, sort of a two steps forward or two steps back, one step forward, I guess, in this situation. And that's how you wind up with a team that's a little bit worse. At the end of the day, hey, it's great billboard material if you're a Blue Jackets fan, because obviously, that is a fan base that deserves a little bit of optimism going into a season.
Yeah,
some positive vibes, Dom is coming in here and raining all over it. But I would encourage you, certainly, if you're a Blue Jackets fan or you're just a fan and you're kind of raising an eyebrow at this, go read the piece because it at least makes the case, and you'll at least come out of it feeling like, okay, I might not agree, but they're not just pulling this out of nowhere. This isn't one of these rankings where, you know, you move a few teams around just to make people mad. They've got some reasoning. There's some logic in this.
Yeah. And, you know, I think when you're a team that has missed the playoffs pretty consistently, if you're a fan of a team that's missed the playoffs pretty consistently, I swear every morning, if you're an Athletic subscriber, you get up and you're like, is today the day? Like, is today the day my team is going to show up in the rankings?
Sure, Ottawa, like I said, or Detroit, or
Detroit.
There's a few of those teams that you're waiting to get to.
Again,
we haven't got to New Jersey yet. You know,
New Jersey and
that's
Detroit
one that if you know if you're Columbus, you're sitting there going, man, we're almost 20 points ahead of these guys. What's going on? The other piece of this, and this has been something that's really struck me just in the analytics era of sport, is as fans we tend to overestimate the difference that one player makes. That really struck me in baseball.
Yeah.
Like, you know, when you would see, you know, your team would sign a guy, oh man, and then you find out that like an MVP caliber player in baseball was like 8 wins.
Worth seven. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, seven or eight wins.
Seven wins over a win over a replacement player.
You're sitting there saying your 75 win team gets a superstar and you're going, oh, we're going to win 100 games now. And you find out, no, you need 3 of those guys to improve that much. And it's kind of the same thing in hockey. Johnny Gaudreau, based on last year, was about a 4.5 win player. Now you add 4.5 wins to the Columbus Blue Jackets and they're a 90 point team, which is still not playoffs, but you know, certainly better. But again, it's clawing back a big chunk of that, based on what the numbers say they should be. They're going to be a very, very interesting team next year. Look, I'll say it. I'm rooting for them. You know, I'd love to see them hang in and play those meaningful games, but, the model, not a fan.
Columbus is one of those teams, unless you're a fan of like maybe Pittsburgh or you know somebody like that. Like, how do you not love them? They're just kind of like a likable team. Like, there's nothing.
They're
really
a likable team, and they haven't.
Right?
You know, they the number one thing that makes that makes you hate a team is success. And the Blue Jackets have had, you know, famously they haven't had that playoff success, haven't had a lot of regular season success. And maybe if you're a Lightning fan, you're not a huge. You know, you're kind of raising your hand going, I can think of one year they had some playoff success, but other than that, no, I mean, it's a great market. It's been, you know, 20 plus years. It's time for them to win something, but and I don't think anyone thinks this is the year that they're cup contenders. It'd be nice to see them, in the mix at the very least going down the stretch.
Yeah. Tuesday was a day where we saw 3 prominent defensemen hang up their skates. PK Subban, Keith Yandel, Zdeno Chara. Real quick, Yandel is the reigning Iron Man in terms of most consecutive games played in the NHL, is able to walk away playing 989 consecutive games. Of course, it felt like he was destined to have, he was made a healthy scratch at the very end there. We thought maybe could he get to 1,000? He's not going to. Phil Kessel's 7 games behind him in the Ironman list, which means if Phil Kessel can basically stay healthy the first 3 weeks of the season with his new team, the Vegas Golden Knights, he'll break that record.
Yep.
And I think it's an interesting story, right? Like, Phil Kessel being the Ironman in hockey is going to be one of the great kind of statistical benchmarks of all time, right?
Like, I can't wait. I love it.
Yeah, it's you're going to see the hot dog in the meat.
Out of shape, Phil Kessel.
Yeah. You know,
guy who's winded on the bench after every shift, you know, doesn't work out. In the second. We don't know if any of this is true, but this is what we've always said about this guy. Doesn't look like an athlete. You know, he looks like somebody who works in your IT department. I love the idea of this guy being the NHL's all-time Iron Man. I hope he gets to 1,000 games. I can't wait to see that happen.
18 games is what he would need to get to 1,000. 8 is what he would need to pass Keith Yandel.
He's got to stay healthy and he's got to stay in the lineup is the other thing. Because, you know, that Vegas team does not have time to mess around. This isn't Philadelphia Keith Yandel out there.
But Keith Yandel, when he had, and it was Mike Yao, I think, right, that had made him the healthy scratch. Mm-hmm. At that point, Yandel was free and clear of Doug Jarvis, right? It wasn't like he was 5 games away from Jarvis. There's no way Phil Kessel is a healthy scratch at any point in the next 7 games. Am I fair to say that?
I'd be very surprised. But remember, there was some talk during the offseason that one of the potential issues with signing Phil Kessel, and again, I don't think it's the 7 games, but it was how much did he want to keep the streak going? Did he want to go to a contender where a contender might say at some point, look, man, you know, you're an older player. We're going to sit you down for a few games, give you a bit of a rest, or maybe you're not even playing up to that lineup spot. And would he go to a team that wasn't that wasn't a contender because he wanted to keep that streak going. And, you know, he didn't do that in Vegas. Again, the seven games, I don't think. I'd be very surprised. But, you know, is he going to play all 82 games? I don't know. I think the streak probably ends at some point.
I think the number is 1,000. I think once he gets to 1,000, you know, A, he's clear of Yandel and anybody else. Brent Burns is the next guy on the list. He's never going to catch him. He's, you know, a couple hundred games behind, right? Like, it's not going to happen. Yep. Mm-hmm. Burns doesn't have enough track. So I would say once Kessel gets to 1,000 games consecutive, which means he needs 18 more, after that, I think you would have the green light as a coaching staff. You're like, you know what? We're deciding to bench you. If he goes 8 or 9 games without a goal, you can bench him or make him a healthy scratch or whatever. He's got the record. He's gotten to 1,000 games. Really, at that point, it doesn't matter, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds good to me. I think that's and you know, I'm sure it was maybe even discussed when he decided to sign there. So that get him to 7, get him to, you know, get him the record, get him to 1,000. And then we're all set.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right, Sean, as always, it is terrific to get Jesse Granger to drop by for a little segment we like to call Granger Things, brought to you by BetMGM, the exclusive betting partner with us at The Athletic. And I'll tell you what, we're at that point in the season. We were talking earlier in the pod, Jesse, about, you know, opening of training camps and you know, all the storylines bouncing around the league. And that's the perfect time for people to start maybe looking at some preseason odds here as or, you know, odds before the start of the regular season. So let's chat here a little bit about maybe some places where to put some smart money down on teams that might make or miss the postseason.
Yeah, so I decided rather than looking at the traditional, you know, win the division, win the West, win the East, win the Stanley Cup, I started looking at they give you odds on to make or miss the playoffs. So I picked two teams that I think their odds maybe should be a little bit better to make the playoffs. I'm a little more optimistic than maybe the sports books are on them. And I'll start with, because I think you're going to have quite a bit to say on this, Ian, the Ottawa Senators at +210 to make the playoffs. That is by far the longest shot of the teams that I would give a chance to make the playoffs. I think it's almost strange. I think I've said this before to talk about how good the Senators offseason was, but I liked everything they did. And I think that, yes, they're in a very tough division, but I think that team, If there's a team out there that's young and has some good talent and just seems to have made the right decisions to kind of push them towards the playoffs, maybe they're not quite ready to get there, but I think they might be worth taking a long shot at, as opposed to trying to, like, they're not going to win the division. They're not going to do anything in the playoffs, but I think you could get some value on the Senators to make the playoffs. What do you think about it, Ian?
Yeah, you know what? It's interesting. And I think Sean would have a good take on this too. I think the issue with Ottawa is not that, are they going to be better? I think we can all agree that they are. The question is, have they closed the gap enough with the rest of the Eastern Conference? And I don't anticipate, this is just me, I don't think all 8 playoff teams in the East will be 100-point teams again. I felt like that's a bit of an aberration. I feel like the number probably will be around 94, 95. But again, now you're asking Ottawa to make basically like a 25-whatever-point leap, 24, 25-point leap.
27 points is... The gap that they've got to make up. Now, that doesn't mean it has to all be Ottawa. It doesn't mean they have to be 27 points better.
Yeah.
They could have the teams they're chasing, you know, Washington or somebody come back to them. But yeah, they're 27 points back of Washington last year. And The other wildcard team in their own division was Boston. They're 34 points back. And I, you know, look, we can all picture Washington taking a step back. I think we can picture Pittsburgh taking a step back. Boston with all those injuries and the new coach. But it's got to be some big steps back, and Ottawa's got to take a big step forward. And they're not just chasing those two teams. There are four other non-playoff teams in between Ottawa and the playoffs based on last year's standing. So they got to pass those teams as well. I'm not saying it's impossible, but it has to be one of those years where almost everything goes right.
See, I think Boston is like, I'm in my eyes, I'm looking at it and I'm saying, okay, which one of these teams, I think the same eight teams aren't going to make the playoffs. That pretty much never happens in hockey. Like someone's going to fall out. Someone's going to jump in. And I think like Boston, if you look at these same type of odds for the Bruins, they're only plus 140 to miss the playoffs. That was a team that I thought going into this exercise, I was going to say, you know what? That is a team that I might bet to miss the playoffs. But at only plus 140, that's not very good value. That's showing you that there's definitely some skepticism in the Bruins with all the injuries and the coaching change.
Yeah, like Boston to me is such a tumultuous team, even though, you know, Bergeron's coming back, Krejci's coming back. Then again, though, to me, this is my thought on Boston. I feel like we've been saying for 5 years, and same with Pittsburgh and Washington to some extent, right? That this is the year they fall off a cliff, and every year they don't. And so to me, I think they've earned the right, just like the Penguins and the Caps, that until they miss the playoffs, you kind of have to assume they make the playoffs, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's definitely fair. To just kind of go along that, the other team that I was looking at, it's another one, and they actually have more ground to make up than the Senators do. If you look at what their points were last year, they only had 63 points last year. But the New Jersey Devils, to me, are a team that, again, that division's going to be tough, but I don't expect Washington and Pittsburgh, and I expect the Rangers to step back. My hot take on our Wednesday show the other day was that the Rangers will miss the playoffs. So I do think that all three of those teams, Rangers, Pittsburgh, and Washington, are all going to take a step back. I don't expect all three to miss the playoffs, but I think somebody in that division is going to step up. And I look at the Islanders, I look at Columbus, and I look at New Jersey. We don't have to look at Philadelphia. But of those three, the Islanders, Columbus, and New Jersey, to me, New Jersey has the, like, I like the upside in New Jersey. Now, it could be a disaster, but I do think that they'd be worth taking a flyer on to make the playoffs out in the Metro. What do you guys think about the Devils?
Boy, that's an even bigger gap. This was supposed to be a good team last year. It's been a running joke for a while. They're the offseason champion. Yeah. Several years running. And last year, they just got torpedoed by terrible goaltending. But I'm not completely convinced the goaltending is going to be much better. It won't be as bad as it was last year, just because that's how goaltending works. It's unpredictable. And it would be surprising if they were as awful as they were. But I'm not convinced. I mean, their solution to the goaltending was to go to Washington and say, can we have your second best goaltender? And Washington was a team that we all said needed better goaltending. So I'm not sure they really fixed it. I hate to get grim. Here's my call for New Jersey as a playoff team. How much do you believe in Andrew Burnett when he takes over from Lindy Ruff early in the season? Because I think that's a very likely situation. And, if you need somebody to take over a team midway through the year, he showed that he could do it pretty well last year. Maybe he's the guy who can work the magic. That's the only way I really see it.
I feel like we need our producer Danielle to save that clip from Sean, and then we roll it back like around American Thanksgiving.
I was promised there were no saving of clips. Everything was going to get burned immediately, and there were going to be no predictions written down
or saved.
Oh, no.
There we go.
There we go. All right.
Sean, you mentioned it, that they were torpedoed by goaltending. I mean, the Devils, but from an expected goals perspective, just if you take goaltending out of it and you just look at the skaters on the ice, they were the 14th best team in the league last year. I mean, like, that's easily in the playoffs.
Really that good? Really? Okay.
I mean, they were better than Washington. They were better than a lot of teams that made the, they were significantly better than the Rangers 5-on-5. Significantly. Now, the Rangers got spectacular goaltending. I don't think Igor Shesterkin's going to take a step back. I think his numbers are going to take a step back because it's just not sustainable to do that no matter how good you are. And I think he's a really good goalie. But I think the Devils were a above average team last year. They got a lot better with their offseason acquisitions. And I agree with you, pinning the hopes on Vitek Vanacek is it's not exactly the smartest move, but I think I still think that he is a significant upgrade. I mean, even if he plays as bad as he did in Washington last year, which was his play was disappointing last year, but I think even playing as disappointed as he was last year, if he plays at that level, he's a major step up from what they got last year. They're obviously going to need him to be better than that to make the playoffs, but I think he can be a little better.
Imagine cheering for a team that needed a goalie and just went out and got somebody off another team who hadn't been good in a while. The other thing with New Jersey is Mackenzie Blackwood stunk last year, flat out.
Yep.
But this time last year, we were talking about him as one of the better young goalies in the league. His name was even coming up as a possible Team Canada.
You know,
third guy on the Olympics. So, you know, maybe the rebound's coming. We kind of saw a similar thing with Carter Hart last year, where, you know, he didn't rebound to star form, but he at least got better. Right? Maybe something like that. You're selling me a little bit here. I gotta say, you're moving the meter is moving from impossible territory to maybe not quite so impossible. Save that clip too, Danielle. Don't hang me out to dry.
And then it goes to slam dunk when Andrew Brunette takes over.
That's right.
At some point. Okay, let's talk a little bit then. Okay, so teams like Ottawa, New Jersey might be smart money to put down on them. You know, they've got talented rosters, just need a little help probably in their own zone. What about the flip side of the equation, Jesse? About, you know, some of these teams that, you know, maybe it's wise to put some money down on them missing the postseason.
Yeah, so I kind of mentioned Pittsburgh before. There's a nice price on Pittsburgh, and for good reason. They've made the playoffs a bajillion years in a row. They're plus 300 to miss the playoffs. 3-1 odds. They're minus 400 to make the playoffs. I think this team probably makes the playoffs, but with their age, with just everything that's this team, like you said, we've been saying they're going to fall off the cliff forever and they haven't. Eventually they will. Someday they happen to the Red Wings. It'll happen to this team. I think plus 300 is an interesting number for Pittsburgh. And then one that's not quite as good of odds, but I'll be honest, the reason I wrote this one down is because when I was going through these teams, what I would do is I would look at the team. Okay. And then I would say, what should be the favorite, making or missing? And with this team was the only team in the league that I got wrong. The Vancouver Canucks, I thought, would be plus money to make the playoffs, and they are not. They're actually a favorite to make the playoffs. They're plus 110 to miss the playoffs, which to me is very surprising. The Pacific is not the strongest division, but Calgary, I don't think they're taking any big steps back. They might have gotten better. We don't know. There's so many new pieces. Edmonton should still be pretty good. The Kings and the Golden Knights were both ahead of Vancouver, and the Golden Knights were an absolute train wreck last year, and they still finished above Vancouver. The fact that the Canucks, to me, are the fifth best team in that division, in a division that only got three teams in the playoffs last year because it was the weakest division, and they're a favorite to make the playoffs, really shocks me. So I would be looking at to Vancouver to miss the playoffs. Not that I don't think they can, but to me, that's very surprising that would be the favorite. What do you guys think?
Well, I think it's interesting when you look at the quotes coming out on Wednesday from Bruce Boudreau in Vancouver. Like, he's making no bones about it. We're a playoff team, right? Like,
yeah.
He's not even, you know, in Ottawa, I spoke to Pierre Dorion. We spoke to Pierre Dorion. And he's like, we just want to play meaningful games. Bruce Boudreau's like, we are a playoff team, like all caps, bold, underlined. The expectations to me, once they got JT Miller done at that price, I know Drance and Harmon have kind of written about this out there. They're in win now mode. They're not in the, maybe in 18 months or 2 years, they're in win now mode, right?
Yep. They're clearly, they think they are, which means they are. You know, you can criticize the roster or talk about what they should be doing, but yeah, that's where they're at. And
would you guys have guessed that they would be favored to make the playoffs? And
that would have been a tough call for me. I would have really probably gone back and forth. And plus 110 is basically even. We can translate and please, Jesse, correct me if my math is wrong here, but plus 110 is basically saying close to 50-50. So if you think if you think they are less than a 50% chance, then you're getting good value. And the Penguins being plus 300, that's essentially 3-1. If you think there's better than the 25% chance that Pittsburgh misses the playoffs, you get in on that. That's awfully tempting to me because, 25%, You don't have to think it's more likely than not in order to get in on, right. on those kind of odds. And I would take a long look at that if I was inclined to bet on a team, because we have seen there are teams where, yeah, I mean, eventually you take a small step back and miss the playoffs. And we've seen teams that they fall off the map. San Jose being one yep. that sticks out a few years ago. You know, they went from the conference final cup contender to nothing and have stayed there for a while. So could it happen to Pittsburgh? Obviously, the fact that they brought all their guys back suggests that it's less likely, but that's not, those aren't bad odds. It's tempting.
Definitely. On the Vancouver side, they're plus 110, which you're right, that is a little better than 50-50, but they're minus 140 to make. So that might be a case of if you don't, maybe just lay off.
Yeah, I don't go anywhere near those odds to make. That's you're not giving me enough there.
Yeah, minus 140. Like I said, they've got four teams above them, and they were teams that you could argue all got better. I mean, Vegas just has to not be a complete train wreck, and they'll get better. Los Angeles yeah. is a young team. They still have some older pieces, but they were so injured. They were maybe the only team as injured as Vegas last year, so they should probably be better. Edmonton. You never know, but they did upgrade their goaltending, in my opinion. And then Calgary, who knows, but they're going to be a really good team. It's like, I don't like when I was looking in the East, I was saying, okay, I think these are the teams that might fall off. In the Pacific, the four teams ahead of Vancouver, to me, all are more likely to get better than worse.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're right. Like Vegas to me feels like just on talent, if they can stay healthy full season of Jack Eichel, some degree of consistent goaltending, they should make the playoffs, right? Like I agree with you. I would put all four of those teams ahead of Vancouver, all things being equal, meaning everyone's healthy, nothing weird happens. You know,
yeah. And something weird always happens. And you know, maybe yeah, that's where you get the odds for Vancouver that it only has to happen to one of those teams they're chasing. But that's a dicey one for sure.
Hey Jesse, before we let you go, I'm curious about one team in particular. That's the Dallas Stars. And only because, you know, they Robertson doesn't seem to be signed and there's some, you know, question marks there. They're one of those classic, I don't know which way this team is going. Like, I have no idea. I'm just curious, what are the Dallas Stars at right now in terms of preseason odds?
So the Stars are kind of right around where Vancouver is. They are minus 160 to make the playoffs. They're plus 130 to miss the playoffs. So a slight favorite towards making. They're actually a little more likely to make the playoffs than the Canucks are, according to these odds. Would you touch either side of that?
I want to know what's happening with Jason Robertson before I do that.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
And yet, that, you know, as soon as we know that, the line probably moves. So, oh boy, I think that's another one I don't go near. This is a team just traded away their first round draft pick for next year, protect the top 10 protected, but still that also suggests it's a team in win now mode, but hard to win now without your best player.
My opinion on that team is Pete DeBoer doesn't miss the playoffs very often. And to me, his style.
I'm glad you added that very often.
I mean, he has in his career, but I mean, he makes the playoffs like 80% of the seasons he's been a coach, I think. To me, watching him in Vegas, I just think his style didn't fit here. And if you would have told me what team in the league fits his style, I probably would have said Dallas. I think that the players there fit what Pete DeBoer wants to do. So I would bet them to make the playoffs.
Yeah. I love those teams, that the quote unquote mushy middle teams, right? Yeah. The Winnipegs, the Dallases, Vancouver, like you just have no idea which way it could go. Jesse, always great to have you drop in, because I know you do the full slate of the Wednesday show. You do the heavy lifting there. And by the way, sounding great with Russo and Rob Pizzo. I listened last week to your show. Fantastic.
Thank you. Yeah.
Loved it.
We're happy to have Mike.
Yeah. Mike is just terrific. A great storyteller.
It's about time that guy jumping in and doing something around here.
Something, man.
Holy lazy. Tired Jeez. Of carrying him.
Seriously. All right. Jesse Granger, my man, thanks for this. Look, we look forward to your coverage of the Vegas Golden Knights here to start the season. Another year underway in Vegas. We look forward to your training camp coverage, and we'll get you again next week.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks, man.
No matter what kind of work you do, how you communicate is key.
Grammarly is your AI writing partner to help you communicate more effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact at work. Whether you're sending emails or writing a Slack message, the last thing you want is a grammatical error. It just looks unprofessional. Just a little bit of help from Grammarly can make a big impact on your work day to day. 96% of Grammarly users report that Grammarly helps them craft more impactful writing. It works across 500,000 apps and websites. Plus, tone suggestions help you navigate even the most difficult work conversations. Save time with one click and go from editing drafts in hours to seconds. 93% of professionals using Grammarly Premium report that it helps them get more work done. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Sign up and download for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
All right. Always great to have Jesse Granger. I think the Golden Knights are going to be an interesting team to watch in training camp and beyond. Let's open up the mailbag. In fact, we got a voicemail here too. Want to remind our listeners here at the Athletic Hockey Show, you can get us anytime. We love to hear from you via email. It's theathletichockeyshow@gmail.com. And at 845-445-8459, you can actually leave us a voicemail. And this is a shocker, Sean, a shocker. Because we got ourselves a voicemail from none other than Barry Gettman. We talked about this last week. Like, boy, I wonder if we ever get a voicemail from a Barry Gettman. Well, guess what? Have a listen. Here's a voicemail from BG himself.
Hi, this is Barry Gettman calling. And I just want to say I am completely against the idea of some kind of play-in. This one time when I was at summer camp, I didn't get called for Red Rover. And I said, why isn't anybody Red Rover in me? And they said, Barry, you're too small. You don't deserve it. And I said, okay, well, if I don't deserve this, then nobody's ever going to get anything they don't deserve. And because of that, I'm completely against the NHL play-in. Not that I have any power or say or anything like that, but thank you very much for taking my call. Have a good day.
All right. There you go. I threw out the theory last week that I felt like Gary Bettman had such a distaste towards kind of the play-in system. Something happened to him as a child. Mm-hmm. Problem, or story solved, mystery solved. It was Red Rover at summer camp.
Boy, that Barry did sound familiar, man. I don't know. I don't know what it is with me and podcasts and Gary Bettman impressions, but I can't escape him. Can't get away from him.
Yeah. Yeah. By the way, like, my kids are a little bit older now, so I'm kind of out of the game. Your kids are, you know, a little bit younger than mine. Do kids still play Red Rover, or is that done?
I don't think so. I can't. Yeah. I certainly haven't heard of any Red Rover injuries.
No broken arms.
Yeah, that feels that. Like this back in the day when, you know, just hey, how about we just run at full speed at each other? What could possibly go wrong with that game? Yeah, I don't know. That's I haven't heard too much of it going on.
All right, I got some emails to get to. Like I said, theathletichockeyshow@gmail.com. We had a lot of fun, shall we say, debating Wilson Phillips last week. Got some great emails here. Jason says, great show last week. It was elevated to a whole other plane of awesomeness with the Wilson Phillips talk. But you guys slept on the song Impulsive as one of their hits. That actually makes Wilson Phillips four hit wonders. I can't believe I just typed that sentence. Keep up the great work. That's from Jason.
You know, I heard from more than one person on this song. I do not have any recollection of that that song. So I'm I don't know about that. Let's see. I'm looking. Oh yeah, you know what? It was number one in Canada. That's all right. You know what? I might have to go and check it out. Okay.
Four hit wonders.
Four hit wonders. Not bad.
Speaking of Wilson Phillips, Joseph writes in, my little sister and I used to share a room along with a Fisher-Price cassette player. While I was playing such cultural luminaries as MC Hammer, Criss Cross, and Weird Al's version of Nirvana, my sister always insisted on that stupid Wilson Phillips. But don't you know, things changed and they went my way. I held on for 10,000 more days.
See what you did there, Joseph.
Yeah, Joseph, we like that. and I actually enjoyed hearing them. And by the way, for once, something hockey related for you the next time you do some obscure questions. I got a question for you guys. I've been a hockey fan for 30 years, have no idea why penalty minutes is abbreviated as PIM, P-I-M. What's that I all about? That's from Joseph.
Yep. You know what? Good question. The I is in. It's penalties in minutes.
But shouldn't it be minutes in penalties? Like, shouldn't it be MIP?
Could just be in penalty minutes. I mean, that would that would work too. But yeah, it's because it's not how many penalties you get, right? That would be a lower number. It's how many penalties in minutes. But yeah, penalty minutes would be absolutely better. But yeah, I guess we just dropped the I in there. So
there you go. Cam writes into the show and says, as a Chicago fan, I don't understand retiring Marian Hossa's number. I get it. He won his cups with Chicago. They would not have won without him, but to put his number next to the ones that are already in the rafters feels a bit strange to me. And I also feel that if you retire Hossa, you have to also retire Patrick Sharp, maybe Charmelson, because the same argument could be made for them as well. That's from Cam. Yeah, we talked about this, right? We said we kind of felt like if you're going to retire Hossa, we felt like Taves and Kane and Keith were slam dunks. That felt like he was opening the door to Seabrook.
Yeah.
And now Cam is saying, look, and Cam's a Chicago fan. Like, hey, Nick Charmelson and Patrick Sharp were big parts of those teams too.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the piece of this is Hossa's a Hall of Famer. And so I don't think that if you put Hossa up there, you've got to do Sharp. You've got to do, because I mean, this isn't just based on, hey, who contributed in 2010 or whatever. I think it's a little, I do think Marian Hossa is a level above those guys. So, but it will be interesting. You know, the Seabrook to me is the tough cutoff, because if you put that guy, then yeah, maybe you do start opening it up to some of the others. And, and I don't think we mentioned it last week, but there's also the whole specter of 2010 hanging over this. And, you know, that team is viewed differently now, certainly outside Chicago than it was, a couple years ago. Is it viewed differently in Chicago? Will it still be when it's time to make these decisions on some guys? I guess we'll see. Do you want to have the rafters hanging with, you know, seven or eight guys from that team? Yeah, maybe you do. I don't know. That's a decision that the team and the fan base will make, but it is going to get dicey on some of those guys. But you know what? You won three cups. Maybe you got a few guys that don't deserve it hanging up there. That's not a bad problem to have. If Dustin Brown can get a statue in LA.
Statue.
That was interesting. Eh? Yeah. It's not just the number retired, but he's getting a statue. That's then maybe that does open the door to a lot of guys having their numbers go up.
Yeah. Like Dustin Brown. Like, what is it? Like Dustin Brown and Magic Johnson?
Yeah.
What's it called now? The Crypt? Crypto?
Yeah.
Crypto.com or something whatever like they call that, it now. Yeah. Like, but that's,
I mean, he's no Ted Rogers.
That's right. Former owner of the Toronto Blue Jays has a statue outside of where the Blue Jays play.
And fans love it.
But move over Ted Rogers, because I do think Dustin Brown becomes the most kind of, what would the word be? I don't even know what the word is.
Yeah, to have his own statue. What's the word? I don't know. Because
I'm not
saying
Dustin Brown isn't an important part. He's a very important part of LA Kings legacy.
He's not obscure, is he statue worthy? But he's, yeah.
He's not statue worthy, I guess.
It is a stretch. Yeah. Are there no other Kings with statues? Like, is it only those guys? So, like, there's no Luke Robitaille, no Gretzky.
Like, Marshall Dion doesn't have a statue?
Yeah. I don't know. Dustin Brown, eh?
Yeah. Okay. Drew in Calgary says, thanks for your hard work on the show. Look forward to your podcast every week. Simple question for you. Why is nobody talking about Shorzy? It was really well done and hilarious. Spread the word. So full disclosure, Drew, in Calgary, I have never seen, I've heard a lot of people talking about this show. Mm-hmm. And I've never seen it. I've never watched an episode. I think in Canada, it's available on a streaming service called Crave. I do believe it's available in the United States. Well, I just want to hear from more people. Like, tell us why, just Drew or whoever, give us the pitch in the comments of why we should watch Shorzy.
Have you ever watched Letterkenny? Would be my question.
I haven't, but I know I'm very familiar. People say that Shorzy's funnier than Letterkenny.
Really?
Right?
Okay.
I think so.
Because I've never sat down and watched either show, but I've seen a bunch of clips of Letterkenny, and they're always fantastic. The very small amount I've seen of Shorzy is excellent as well. But yeah, again, like I don't have this So it's weird that you'd make hockey shows and they're kind of hard to find in Canada, but that's sort of the situation we're in up here. But yeah, go ahead and sell me. I'm looking for a show to add to the pile. So make the pitch.
One last email here from Daniel. And Daniel says, look, I got an idea for a mid-season NHL tournament every year. So every February in a four-year cycle, you do the following. Year one, it's the Olympic Games. Year two, you shut down the season to have a three-on-three tournament. Year three, you shut down the season to have the World Cup of Hockey. And then year four, once again, you go back to a three-on-three tournament. And his point on the three-on-three is like, look, you do this in a couple of cities. It's a 32-team single elimination. You know, you do it that way. Cash prizes for the teams that finish at the top. Look, I'm on board with if you're going to shut down the season and do the Olympics, and then every second year you do the World Cup hockey, I say yes. I don't know about this three-on-three idea. I love outside-the-box ideas. I don't want to kind of dissuade anybody from emailing us or throwing crazy ideas because I love them. Mm-hmm. I just don't know that the three-on-three idea has traction. You know what I mean?
It's not even the three-on-three. It's how do we make the players care? How do we make sure that we're getting, because we've seen what three-on-three looks like when the players don't care, and it's the All-Star game, and it's awful. It's unwatchable. So how do you, you know, and I know he mentions cash prize. Well, we give cash on the All-Star game, and it doesn't help. Draft picks, you know, that would be an okay incentive. But again, I think draft picks are less of an incentive for players. You know, again, like it's like the idea of the end of season tournament. I'm not going to go out there and, you know, bust my behind so that my team can get a draft pick to draft my replacement. I just, it's the effort level. And that's what we like about the midseason tournament that we're seeing in the NBA, because it's regular season games. These games count. They matter. That's why the outdoor games work. I don't know that this may, maybe if there's a way to do 3-on-3, but you count it as a regular season game. I know some people would hate that, but I think that's the key. It's got to count in the standings. It's got to matter because, no sport looks good played at half speed, but hockey is just awful when it's played that way.
Let's wrap up with a little This Week in Hockey History. 30 years ago this week, Sean, a brand new NHL team, the Tampa Bay Lightning, were about to play their first game, right? They hadn't been in the NHL. And they decide to sign goaltender Manon Raymond, making her the first woman to play in an NHL game. It was an exhibition game that the Lightning played. She played one period for them. That was 30 years ago this week. A lot of people said total publicity stunt, you know. But, you know, how do we view that now, three decades later? How do we view that?
It was a total publicity stunt. And I think it was Phil Esposito running Lightning at the time. He was upfront about that. And it's a new team, new market, not a traditional hockey market by any stretch. You want to get some eyes on the product. And but that being said, you know, it was a marketing stunt, but it wasn't a joke. You know, Manon Raymond wasn't some terrible player. You know, she didn't go out there and get lit up. You know, she could play. You know, was she worth getting a spot in an NHL game? Look, I mean, it's an entertainment product. It was a combination of skill and marketing that added up to it making some sense. I know some people rolled their eyes at it back then. Some people would, I'm sure, roll their eyes at it if it was done today. But it showed a little flair. And like I always say, that this sport, this league, is an entertainment product first and foremost. And I do feel like this is kind of held up better over time because the idea of a woman playing hockey is not as strange to us as it may have been 30 years ago, because you know, we've seen so much elite play on the women's side, especially internationally, so that you know, it doesn't feel as novel as it maybe would have back then. I don't know if we'll ever see it again, but it was kind of neat.
She played one period against St. Louis, 9 shots on goal, stopped 7 of them, let in 2 goals. And if you recall, like I think this is also what shows you how far we've probably come on this, that when Manon Raymond made her debut in that exhibition game for Tampa, Do you remember this? Playboy magazine asked her to pose in the magazine.
Yeah, I think I do remember
that. And I just looked up the quote here because Sportsnet caught up with Manon Rayom a couple of years ago. And they said to her, you know, what was the story behind that? And she said, that was after I played junior. I was 20 years old. And I said, no way I'm going to do that. They said, well, we'll send you some pictures. You can see you can still be wearing clothes. And she says they basically showed her pictures of, you know, she said it was girls just wearing a tie. I didn't even think twice about it. She said, I don't even care how much money they were going to give me. And I could have used the money. I just said no. But I think it just shows you now, like it's, you know, I know we still have a long way to go, but you can't even imagine now something like that happening, right? Like if a woman had an opportunity to go and, you know, play an exhibition game in the NHL, there wouldn't be this odd attachment like that.
No, there'd be, you know, right? There some stupid company would do it as a publicity stunt and we'd all just ignore it.
Right.
That's the way. Yeah. I mean, look, we're, like I said, we're not there yet, but we are making progress at least. So
yeah.
I guess that's cool.
Yeah. We want to tee up something here before we say goodbye. We got a brand new episode or edition of the pod coming, starting tomorrow. So we got a brand new Friday edition of the Athletic Hockey Show, Sean. So Haley Salvian and Sean Gentile are going to host a brand new Friday episode of the Athletic Hockey Show. Oilers goalie Jack Campbell going to drop by the pod on Wednesday as their first guest.
I'll be listening to that because, yeah, good old Jack. Oh, we didn't appreciate what we had at the time, did we?
Yeah. You don't know what you got till it's gone, right?
Yeah. I think that must be it.
That's the song. So anyway, we want to just promote the fact that Gentile and Haley, a brand new Friday edition of the Athletic Hockey Show coming your way later this week. So look for that. We'll leave it there. This was a lot of fun as always. I want to thank everybody for joining us for this Thursday edition of the Athletic Hockey Show. We got lots of emails. We can always take more. TheAthleticHockeyShow@gmail.com. Or if we get another email or a voicemail from Barry Getman, that's cool too. 845-445-8459. Not a subscriber with us. You can join us at theathletic.com/hockeyshow. Annual subscription for $1 a month the first 6 months. Also got something cool called the Athletic Audio Plus. Get that on Apple Podcasts. All of our bonus content from the entire network. You will start with a 30-day free trial. And then it's just 99 cents a month after that.